Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
847, Phil Menichian for John Records Landecker here at 720 WGN. He is the Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. The title of the organization pretty much says it all, but we'll dive into that. He's Ward Miller. Ward, thank you for joining us here at 720 WGN.
Thank you, Phil. Glad to be here.
I have to tell you a brief story before we get started with everything. I was going to be an architect. I was going to be an architect designing buildings that you helped preserve eventually. I was at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and I ran into a thing called calculus. We didn't get along, but I took Architecture 101, my term paper. We were given the task of doing an environmental impact report on an existing building, taking this building and, you know, making the proposal of building it and what would happen to the environment. And I did mine on the Metropolitan Correctional Center at Clark and Van Buren in Chicago.
Wow.
The triangle building. Yeah.
Yes.
Harry Weiss, 75 is when it was done. Harry Weiss, the architecture. The exercise yard on the roof, which caused some problems. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not a landmark building, is it?
There. No, it's not yet. Not yet, but maybe one day.
Do you see that happening?
You know what? I could see that happening because it was a very clever idea for basically a downtown jail, right? A high-rise building, no bars, right? Except at the top of the building, there's a fence, if you will, but narrow slit-like windows and looked like a computer card. Remember when it was first finished? And it was always a very striking building, and especially in context to the South Loop and the historic buildings that existed around it. So, I could see that being a very important building and designated a landmark one day. Sure.
We'll stay tuned.
Harry Weiss's work is really outstanding.
Yeah, definitely. I was taken aback by it, and it was such a great project for me to just get involved with, you know, in my hometown and everything. So it was really, really cool. I have to ask you, what's your role as the Executive Director of Preservation Chicago? What do you do?
Well, we really spotlight buildings, encourage their landmark designation, outreach to communities to determine which buildings they find important. Look for those stories. Look for those beautiful streetscapes that, you know, make you fall in love with a community or a neighborhood, or, you know, pick up on those amazing histories that maybe a lot of people have forgotten, and to encourage landmark designation, encourage preservation. We also work with developers when we have a troubled building, a building that might be, you know, abandoned, like the Hotel Guyon on their west side, or even the Union Station Powerhouse, just off the on the Chicago River, the south bank of the Chicago River, at Roosevelt Road. It's the Graham Anderson Probst and White building that sits vacant. And, you know, we have a developer who wants to turn it into a data center. But yet sometimes in that situation with Amtrak, they'd prefer spending $9 to $13 million to demolish it and either have a paved parking lot or a maintenance train shed there. And that's not what we want for our city. We want the Riverwalk, which will be extended eventually down to this location. We want it to be beautiful, and we want it to have buildings of great integrity. And, you know, keeping this building and reusing it is a lovely answer. So we work with communities, we work with developers, we work with the city to encourage preservation of the built environment. And that's very important to us, especially in Chicago, a city of architecture, where so much tourism evolves around the built environment and our incredible buildings. So why demolish them?
Right. Your vision statement reads, Preservation Chicago is committed to strengthening the vibrancy of Chicago's economy and quality of life by championing our historic built environment. That kind of says it all, right?
It really does. It really does. And that's part of our mission. That is our mission. But, you know, we go far beyond that. We outreach to communities and encourage that dialogue, work with them. And, you know, one of our most recent, I'd say, victories for everybody is the designation of the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley House. You know, a small two-flat vernacular Victorian building in the West Woodlawn community that really faced an uncertain future with three vacant lots to the north of it and five pages of code violations. but, you know, we realized that there was an issue here and that this was one of those buildings you wanted to see protected because it was, you know, the tragic death of Emmett Till and, you know, the remarkable courage of his mother to keep his memory alive and to talk about injustices and make America a place for everybody that really sparked the civil rights movement and so influenced Dr. King, Dr. Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks, among others. And we thought this was an amazing touchstone to Emmett Till, a young child who got caught up in this nightmare of events and a great tragedy. And we're very proud to work with the Till family, the community, the alderwoman, and the city. You know, we basically wrote the report and did a lot of outreach over the course of several years and wanted to see this happen on the 65th anniversary of Till's death. We thought that the building was endangered and didn't want to see another part of Chicago history erased.
Right. For those who don't know the story, I'll briefly recap it. Emmett Till was 14 years old. He traveled to Mississippi to visit his great uncle. The story goes that he was accused of whistling at a white woman at a grocery store. 4 days later, the white woman's husband and his half-brother killed Emmett, dumped his body into the Tallahatchie River. Less than a month after his body was recovered, an all-white jury deliberated for under an hour before acquitting the two. So I didn't know this until I really researched it, and you touched on it. In December of 55, so this happened in August of 1955. Mm-hmm. In December of 55, Till's murder was cited by Rosa Parks in her refusal to give up her seat on the Montgomery, Alabama bus, triggering the Montgomery bus boycott. So kind of an important situation, right?
Yes, yes. And then another just a little but important detail is that Look magazine went and interviewed the two accused that were found not guilty by the jury a number of months later and paid them quite a substantial fee in 1955. And they admitted to the murder of Emmett Till, so they were guilty. And it still shakes me. I got to tell you to talk about this, even though I wasn't even born yet. That was just 6 years before I was born, but still a very disturbing story. But what was really so important was the sort of legacy that Emmett and his mother left, and the inspiration to people like Dr. King and Rosa Parks and others to make us a better America. And we can't forget that.
Right, right. The building, the house was built in 1895. What do you see as its future? I've heard talks of a museum. Is this true?
Yes. The current owner is Blacks and Green, which is was founded and is run by a West Woodlawn resident named Naomi Davis, forgive me on that. And she has plans to make this a museum dedicated to the Till family and the legacy, as well as the great migration of African Americans to Chicago with the Great Migration. And it's really noble, and the city wants to help, and those three vacant lots to the north will hopefully be a memorial park and a small visitor center with the building being housing a museum, if you will, dedicated to those ideas.
What's the next step in that process? Do we have kind of a plan? Or
Well, the building was acquired by Blacks and Green in October, and it was just landmarked by the city council last week. And there was a lot of discussion during all the steps in this process that the city would help Blacks and Green and Naomi Davis and the community and the alderwoman and all of us that are sort of supporters of this idea towards that vision and that goal, and they would help them with acquire the vacant lots that city owns one, the county owns another, and I think the last one is privately owned, but they would help us assemble all of this. So this really could be a site of honor and part of a greater tour of civil rights sites throughout the United States.
Right. Right. I know this, I mean, I've got about 2 minutes before we need to take a break for the news here, and we'll continue it later. I know I'm just going to scratch the surface here, but can old and new exist together? I think that's an important question.
Absolutely. You know, part of the beauty of a place like Chicago is that you can see these gleaming new skyscrapers, even the mid-century modern ones next to the great Chicago school skyscrapers of, you know, Adler and Sullivan, Burnham and Root, Hollerbird and Roche, Frank Lloyd Wright, even Marina City, Bertrand Goldberg, in contrast with some of the other buildings that you see along the river, really create a sense of really a dynamic quality. I think we want to be careful about how we place these buildings and, you know, the old buildings that are taken down. I think we really need to do a better job of researching them and having different layers of protection beyond just landmark designation and downzoning. But we're getting there, and hopefully, you know, a new administration and some new aldermen working together with the city and city officials, old and new, freshmen and those seasoned politicians, working with all of us together, maybe can come up with some wonderful ideas and put Chicago at the forefront of preservation, as well as, you know, continuing the architecture movement, looking to the future.
I want to talk more about that when we return. We're talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. I also want to touch on someone who I'm pretty sure kind of influenced you and your group. Okay, we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the Chicago 7, how you come up with that, what that is, so much more about preserving Chicago with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. 9 minutes past 9 o'clock. 720 WGN, Phil Manicki in for John Records Landecker. We're talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director for Preservation Chicago. Ward, where would you say that Chicago stands, not only in the U.S., but worldwide, as far as preservation is concerned? How are we doing?
Well, we're doing okay. You know, you would think that for a city so well known worldwide for its architecture, that we'd have more landmarks and landmark districts. And it's been challenging. And, you know, we've had some fierce battles, you know, going back 50 years and continuing through Prentice Hospital, you know, 10 years ago. You know, a modern structure by Bertrand Goldberg, the same architect as Marina City that was demolished. And, you know, that continues today. And we see this primarily, you know, along the lakefront neighborhoods and in communities throughout the inner city, whereas the pressures used to be, you know, primarily downtown. We've now seen that spread to neighborhoods. So, you know, we're actually pro-development. We encourage development, but we encourage sensitive development, where you can integrate a historic resource or invest in a historic building and landmark, and, you know, bring it up to date, bring it up to code, you know, invest in these great buildings that are so much a part of our cityscape and really unique to Chicago oftentimes.
That sounds so easy to do, but it's really not, is it?
I can tell you that it's not. But, you know, we rise to the challenge every morning, and we've got a staff that really works 24/7 to make this a better city. And we realize that we can grow a really healthy city by maintaining the buildings that we have and, of course, infilling where need be, and still have room for, you know, a lot of positive developments. But, you know, demolition is such a harsh thing. And if we can reuse these buildings, keep them out of landfill, save the earth, and encourage their reuse when that determination is made that, you know, the use has to change, we're here and we help. And everything we do is pro bono. We basically give it all away. We don't have galas. We don't have fundraisers. We do write grants, and we do have foundations and individuals that like what we do and support us in those efforts. So that's really important, too, that we're open and available to everyone. And anyone who calls, guess what? You get me answering the phone. the buck stops here, so to speak.
How long has Preservation Chicago been around?
Well, this is our 20th year, so it's a very special time. And this is also the 150th anniversary of the Chicago Fire this year, which really did change the landscape, of course, in Chicago, but brought in so many innovations and technologies that really promoted us as a city of architecture, as the central core. Had to be rebuilt quickly, and we used such innovations as steel and cast iron and metal to create lighter buildings where you could hang the masonry and the brick and the terracotta onto, almost like hanging it onto a birdcage, if you will. And these are the great innovations of Chicago. And of course, it made for larger window openings in a time before air conditioning, so for ventilation, and also for light in an age before and at the advent of electricity. So, you know, this is why the buildings of Chicago are so important in the world of architecture. All of those innovations, from the Chicago school buildings to the mega superstructures we have, like the Hancock Building, the Sears Tower. Notice I'm going with the original names. The Standard Oil Building, and then continuing on to today's superstructures that are under construction.
Thank you for saying Standard Oil Building, too. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Standard Oil of Indiana, to be exact, right?
I want to dive into someone who I think influenced what you guys do a lot. And I think you know who I'm talking about, Aaron Montgomery Ward, right?
Yes, he's one of them. Yes, Aaron Montgomery Ward was very much involved in protecting our lakefront, our Chicago's front yard, sort of carrying the banner forever open and free, and fighting that in the courts. And of course, A. Montgomery Ward was also head of the retail company, catalog company, and later department store, Montgomery Ward's, Chicago-based institution. And yes, his ideals extended from the earliest days of Chicago. Most importantly, he protected those ideals and wasn't really recognized in his lifetime as he should have been. But he's one of those great Chicagoans. He's in our Hall of Fame at Preservation Chicago. I think Friends of the Parks and other organizations, other civic organizations, as well as most Chicagoans, would probably agree with that.
Right. I want to talk more about him in just a little bit. We're going to take a quick quick break and more with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago, here at 720 WGN. 918 here at 720 WGN. Phil Minicky for John Records Landecker. We're talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. We're talking about A. Montgomery Ward. I just want to share some facts with folks who may not know about what this man did for the city of Chicago. Montgomery Ward, yeah, you're going to do the catalog. No. It was much more than that, of course. Obviously, right, Ward?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Grant Park was kind of his stomping ground, so to speak. It was his statement. It had been protected since 1836 by forever open, clear and free legislation. And this has been affirmed by four Illinois Supreme Court rulings. Ward twice sued the city of Chicago to force the city to remove buildings and structures from Grant Park and to keep it from building new ones on this hallowed ground that he totally believed in.
That's correct. And it's Montgomery Ward, not Ward Miller, that did that. Just for the record, share a common name here.
Known for he fought for the poor people's access to Chicago's lakefront. In 1906, he campaigned to preserve Grant Park as a public park. That came to fruition with Daniel Burnham's famous 1909 Burnham Plan, which eventually preserved Grant Park and the entire Chicago lakefront. So that was 3 years after Montgomery Ward kind of said, hey, we got to do this.
That's correct. That's good. You know, there were other individuals involved. And remember that there was the South Park system designed by Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Baugh and others, if you will. A list is lengthy. That had also been situated on the lakefront from about 57th Street onward to Jackson Park Harbor in the thresholds of South Shore, really, and La Rabida Hospital, of course. And that whole realm is part of the South Park Commissioner's project and extending west down the Midway through the University of Chicago to Washington Park, and those were just considered legacy parks, and you tied that to Lincoln Park on the north side, and you know you have this wonderful green necklace, if you will, of boulevards crossing the city and connecting all these parks and inner city parks to the lakefront and Lakeshore Drive, and of course Grant Park and downtown, and it's really a fabulous system. It's part of what makes Chicago such a beautiful city and such a wonderful place to live.
Right. You touched on this earlier when Montgomery Ward died in 1913. His wife, Elizabeth, bequeathed a large portion of his estate to Northwestern University and other educational institutions as well. Erie Park was named in honor of A. Montgomery Ward. It is a few blocks away from the old Montgomery Ward and Company Catalog House building, 600 West Chicago Avenue. This happened in 2010. It took a little bit, didn't it?
Long overdue, huh?
Yeah.
like 100 years?
Just a bit. In 2005, Forbes magazine readers and editors ranked Aaron Montgomery Ward as the 16th most influential businessman of all time.
Wow. That's amazing. I wasn't aware of that ranking. But
yeah.
Not bad for a guy who, died in 1913, right? To be remembered that way.
And he's one of the busts at Merchandise Mart, one of eight bronze busts. Joseph Kennedy, to immortalize outstanding American merchants, commissioned eight bronze busts to happen in 1953. These are four times life size. If you haven't seen these, you have to check it out because it's pretty cool. And Aaron Montgomery Ward is one of those. Okay. Who else?
Along with Marshall Field and Richard Sears, I believe. Three Chicagoans in that lineup. Not too bad, huh?
Frank Winfield Woolworth as well. Julius Rosenwald and Robert Eckington Wood of Sears Roebuck & Company. Also, advertiser John Wanamaker, Edward Albert Feline, and A&P grocery chain founder George Huntington Hartford. I did a little research.
You did, and you know what? I tell you, Julius Rosenwald is one of those great philanthropists, too, just like Montgomery Ward, A. Montgomery Ward. He did so much, and there's now recognition of his work and his dedication to building hundreds of schools for African Americans in the rural South in an age where education and access to education and schoolrooms were not always viable for African Americans, and he's really been celebrated. And of course, Julius Rosenwald also gave us a reconstruction of the Palace of Fine Arts in Jackson Park, which was the first field museum and is now the Museum of Science and Industry. And he funded that and was a really, really one of those wonderful heroes in Chicago's history and also in America's history.
Absolutely. We're talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. Who else, other than A. Montgomery Ward and some of the folks that you just mentioned, were influential in kind of influencing what you guys do and started the ball rolling, so to speak, with this whole preservation thing?
Well, you know, as far as the modern age, this is going beyond, you know, William LeBaron Jenney and Daniel Burnham and Louis Sullivan and Jens Jensen, famous designer, park designer, and, you know, Olmsted and Baugh, and Alfred Caldwell. We can't forget about Alfred Caldwell, who designed the Lily Pond and designed some aspects of Jackson Park. But, you know, the preservation movement was really founded by people like Tom Stauffer and Richard Nickel, the famous photographer who died while trying to save components and fragments of the Chicago Stock Exchange building in 1972 as that was being demolished at LaSalle in Washington. And his photographs really captured the essence of these buildings that, you know, before they were cleaned and restored, oftentimes were soiled and had been remodeled, and people didn't really look at them in the same light as we would today, fully restored back to their original vision. And, you know, his documentation of the Garrick Theater and building, originally built as the Schiller Building by Dankmar Adler and Louis Sullivan, really kicked us off here as far as recognizing landmarks and how important they are to our cities. And this legacy museum that we have in Chicago of some of the finest buildings of that era, and especially in America, and the loss, the wholesale demolition of these structures. And I think we regret that to this day, but that effort, along with the demolition of Penn Station or Pennsylvania Railroad Station in New York, really did kick off this new awareness. And I think we've done a heck of a job of educating the world and the population of Chicago as to why these buildings were so important. And before those demolition cries of the 1960s, the early 1960s, you know, a lot of that information was kind of limited to architects and architectural historians and scholars and history books, but not necessarily known to the average person or the average American. So we've done a heck of a job educating people on a big scale. Lots of organizations dedicated to that mission, including the Chicago Architecture Center, and a lot of our partners that we work with every day. And telling that story and keeping those stories and those ideals alive are so much a part of what these landmarks are all about. And giving them, you know, great meaning and histories, really, and why they're, and telling people why they're so important, really is important to maintaining their legacy and keeping that interest in the historic fabric of our city, which is so critical to walkability and scale and small businesses and all, so many of the wonderful things that we value in our city that because of COVID we're not able to really experience this past year.
Right. I want to run down the 7 criteria for designation of Chicago landmarks, and if I can get your just a little reaction to each. I got to take a break in just about a minute here, but we'll get started and we'll continue. So in considering a building or district for a potential landmark designation, the Commission on Chicago Landmarks, which, by the way, is a 9-member board appointed by the mayor, is limited in its consideration only to the following 7 criteria. This was established in the Municipal Code of Chicago, Section 2-120, 620. When was this code established? What was the year?
Yeah, 1968 is when the revised code that gave protections to buildings. Before that, there was a Landmarks Commission. It was more honorary. It was established in the late 1950s and designated a number of buildings, but you know, they were just honored with a plaque and they had no protections. And then after the loss of the Garrick and a whole number of others, the Republic Building, the McClure, a number of buildings that were lost in that period. In 1968, they reinforced that with this ordinance that actually has teeth to protect these buildings that are landmarks.
Got it. We're talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. We're going to dive into the 7 criteria for designation of Chicago landmarks. We'll get started with number 1. I do have to take a news break in about 30 seconds here, but we'll get started. First of all, it's a critical part of city's heritage. That is number 1 on the list. What does that mean?
You know, think of your great retailers, you know, someone tied to Sears Roebuck, somebody tied to Montgomery Ward, or some building or some element of the city tied to that sort of larger idea, if you will. And so that fits into that particular criteria.
Got it. We're going to move on to 2 through 7. Again, criteria for designation of Chicago landmarks with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. Here at 720 WGN, Phil Minicky for John Records Landecker, talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. We started with the criteria for designation of Chicago landmarks. We're on number 2. Ward, if you could maybe give me an example of each one of these criteria, okay?
Sure.
So number 2, a significant historic event. I'm thinking Water Tower, right?
Water Tower, Chicago Fire, Fort Dearborn, a lot of things, you know, the nomination of Abraham Lincoln as president of the, you know, president, or the nomination, the Republican nomination of Abraham Lincoln, later president of the United States in Chicago.
Got it.
Is another example. That happened downtown at Wacker and Lake, basically.
Got it. Number 3 on the criteria for designation of Chicago landmarks is significant person.
Right. You think of people like Jane Addams. You think of people like we've been talking about, Richard Sears, Montgomery Ward, Marshall Field, or a great, even a great architect, although that's another category. But, you know, really anyone of great note.
Right. Next is important architecture.
What's an example of that? You know, it can relate to an important architect or a style of architecture or a type of architecture that's really unique or rare. Some of these two have a tendency to sometimes blend together a little bit,
right,
and overlap.
Sure, sure. Number 5 on the list of 7 is important architect, like a Frank Lloyd Wright building, so to speak.
Correct. Right. Exactly.
Next,
exactly.
Distinctive theme as a district. I have an idea for one of those. Pullman, right?
Yes. And thinking of thematic districts, maybe those neighborhood banks that you see throughout the city that are really wonderful, that anchor, you know, various commercial districts, a grouping of those have all been landmarked together, or a grouping of tide houses. We're trying to save the former La Luce Lake Street Tide House, and it was part of the Schlitz Tide House Landmark District, buildings located throughout the city.
Got it. Number 7 on the criteria for designation of Chicago landmarks is unique visual feature. I'm going with the building I really like, the MCC, right? The Metropolitan Correctional Center.
Which should be on the list.
Because it kind of stands out, right?
Absolutely.
When do I start work for you guys? Because I'm thinking
you're working for us right now,
Phil. I'm just saying. A potential Chicago landmark must meet at least 2 of the above landmark criteria. It must also meet an additional integrity criteria as specified in that same municipal code, and it must have a significant historic, community, architectural, or aesthetic interest of value, or the integrity of which is preserved in light of its location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, and ability to express such historic, community, architectural, or aesthetic interest in value. There's a lot going on there. Wow.
And you did that in one breath. I'm impressed.
I'm a trained professional. Don't try this at home.
So integrity really does refer to the building maintaining its original vision, not, you know, resided, rethought. If you had a really beautiful historic, let's say, cottage, a workman's cottage with a lot of gingerbread detailing on it, and it was covered with asphalt siding and then covered with aluminum siding and then covered with some other material, you'd lose your integrity there. So that's an important feature to remember, and sometimes challenging, especially with some of our earliest pre-fire houses that really should be landmarked, but sometimes they do have issues where they've experienced some remodeling over time. So the integrity criteria is important to remember.
Right, right. All right, under the Chicago 7. Now, since 2003, Preservation Chicago has announced its annual Chicago 7 Most Endangered List to draw attention to important Chicago historic resources threatened by demolition to due to development pressure, neglect, or a lack of resources. Once included as a Chicago 7, a historic building or resource remains an advocacy priority of Preservation Chicago for as many years as it takes it to be saved or demolished. There's been approximately 100 historic resources identified since 2003, and it says here, we have enjoyed many wins, suffered a number of tragic losses, and remain committed to the advocacy efforts to protect those buildings that remain endangered. The thing I want to ask you about is, you say you do not keep score here, but you kind of have to, right?
Well, you know, I think that we oftentimes celebrate our wins, which are preservation wins for everybody, not just for us. This is a, you know, we consider ourselves, a municipal, a Chicago organization that, you know, does good, if you will. So we do go ahead and celebrate our wins and acknowledge our losses too. And there are a lot of wins, but there are also some painful losses. One of our Chicago 7, the former Chicago Town and Tennis Club Unity Church, a beautiful Tudor style building, got demolished this past spring, and yet, you know, we've got a lot of successes. A number of really wonderful former houses now comprise the Near North Landmark District, and those are the former houses between Grand Avenue and, or basically the Michigan Avenue Bridge, and Chicago Avenue, the old water tower, and extending a few blocks east of Michigan Avenue to almost LaSalle Street. Mm-hmm. And these are really important for scale, sense of history, their contributions to Chicago, as well as their significant architects. And also, you know, on the side, they create a place for small businesses to exist and flourish. And oftentimes there are small restaurants and cafes, and tourists and residents alike really enjoy these, but they give a sense of scale, and they also allow light and air down into the street below versus having canyons of buildings for miles on end. So it's really important to have some of these buildings that are so critical to our quality of life, as well as their architectural importance, recognized and landmarked and protected.
Right, right. So number one on the list this year was one you just mentioned, the Chicago Town and Tennis Club Unity Church. So you said you were not successful with that one. I know there was Misericordia was involved. And what happened there?
You know, we had a plan to move this building a couple hundred feet onto a park site where it would be combination center for immigrants and refugees, as well as park district facilities and a field house for Emerson Park, which was once part of the Chicago Town and Tennis Club back in its glory days, but had been separated. And unfortunately, you know, we were all working together towards this goal of saving this building and moving it, and unfortunately, Misericordia decided to move ahead with their project despite some wonderful ideas that we had that we thought would, you know, help the neighborhood, help the Westridge community, and provide a place for children to have, you know, indoor space on those inclement days. We have a number of those in Chicago, and provide facilities for several nonprofits that were being displaced from a building a couple miles to the east. So it was kind of unfortunate in many regards, and we were hoping for better, but we move onward.
We will. We will. We'll get to number two and then two through seven. We're talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. Again, number two on the 2020 edition of the Chicago 7, Buildings That You Want to Get Preserved. That next here at 720 WGN. Song about the Chicago 7. 720 WGN, 947 Phil Manikian for John Records Landecker, talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. Time has really gotten away from us. We got to wrap this up. I'm going to save the two biggest ones for last, and I know you know what those are.
But we're
talking about the Chicago 7, Buildings That You Really Want to Preserve. Number two on the list is the Washington Park National Bank. Now, I'm told that in 2016, substantial back tax debt, estimated at like $3.7 million, was cleared by the Cook County Land Bank Authority. So it's looking good there, maybe?
You know what? It is, and that was very positive, although, of course, this building withered for, 40 years, if you will, with tax debt, and that was cleared, and, we're hopeful that the Cook County Land Bank and the developer who persevered here will persevere further to save the building. Right now, there's a plan. They have a plan to demolish it. We're hoping we can change that perspective and that outcome.
Sounds good. We touched on this one earlier, Union Station Powerhouse. Amtrak wants to demolish it and make a maintenance shed. This is right on the Chicago River, right?
Yeah, high-profile location, Amtrak is based out east, and they want to spend $9 to $13 million to demolish this building by Graham Anderson, Probst and White. And this is really an extension of the Union Station complex. Railroads built Chicago, and we've lost so many of our grand terminals. This is really a building worthwhile to save, and we have a data center user that would like to buy it, and we have a change.org petition online. So if you go to Union Station Powerhouse, change.org petition, it'll pop up and you can sign it. We want to encourage everybody to sign up.
Got it. Number four on the list of seven, Roseland, Michigan Avenue Commercial District. I believe this is pretty much kind of an example of demolition by neglect, right?
Right. Yeah. The Roseland community on Chicago's far south side has seen a lot of disinvestment over the last 50 years. And we'd like to see this district reinvigorated. And don't forget, it's right next to the Pullman National Monument, which is about ready to open its visitor center to 300,000 people, is estimated next year, in the old clock tower building, which will highlight Pullman. And if you just walk under the viaduct, you're in Roseland and also Pullman land. So this is really an exciting idea, and it's part of that grander vision that the city has to invest southwest. So we're hopeful that we'll see some great investment here in Roseland.
Got it. Number five of seven, the Chicago 7 buildings that really need to be preserved, is the Central Manufacturing District. This is on Pershing Road between Ashland and Western in McKinley Park. What's going on here?
You know what? It's slow demolition by neglect, if you will. It's masonry has been removed from one building in its entirety, which was really tragic. And this is really a beautiful group of 1917 era and then moving forward of industrial buildings that were really concentrating industries and large and small firms in Chicago. Some big name companies like Goodyear and other companies were anchored here, along with a branch of the U.S. Army, and we'd like to see these buildings preserved. When you go down Pershing Road, these buildings look like soldiers lined up all the way down Pershing Road for more than a mile, anchored by a clock tower in its center, and really remarkable district of buildings that should be landmarked and preserved.
Got it. All right, the final two, the biggies. The biggies. We're talking with Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago, about the Chicago 7. I'm going to go with this one next. Jackson Park, the South Shore Cultural Center in Midway Plaisance. The 500-acre Jackson Park was designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, 1870s. And the Obama Presidential Center is to be sited on about 20 acres of this 500-acre park. What's going on there?
You know what, Phil? We welcome our Presidential Center to Chicago's South Side. This is a remarkable feat, but we do believe that it doesn't necessarily belong in a public park. It's been a public park for 130 years and designed by one of the greatest landscape architects of America in the 19th century, Frederick Law Olmsted and his firm. And so we want to encourage the Obama Foundation to relocate this to several alternative sites. One is right next to the Green Line on 9 acres that the city and the CTA and the University of Chicago own. And it would be such a wonderful development for that area just west of Washington Park. The Washington Park community and across the street from Washington Park, the Olmsted Park, and really be a bright light for the community and encourage reinvestment in much of that area. And this would really be a shot in the arm, if you will, to that community. So we want to encourage this to come from its lakefront park site, which, you know, we've been talking about, A. Montgomery Ward wanted to protect, and move it westward to some private lands where, you know, they can redevelop a new park around it and really have a dynamic center that integrates so beautifully into the landscape of the neighborhood.
What do you say to people who tell you that this presidential center should be part of the park and exist with it?
Well, we make a point that the parks have actually grown around a lot of these institutions over time, and that we've never seen a brand new campus of buildings inserted into a historic park. That's one of our legacy parks. We think that there's a lot of development that happens around this area. Look at the University of Chicago. They have a number of high-rises that are going up along the Midway, but not in the middle of the Midway. And you don't see a lot of development happening around that. So we really think that this shouldn't be just an extension of the University of Chicago campus into Jackson Park. Even if it does honor our former president, we really think that this deserves a wonderful new site of its own that's very special and is accessible to all by various transit lines and, of course, the Green Line, the CTA, versus, you know, taking the more remote routes to Jackson Park, which is, you know, not always so easily accessible.
Got it. Number 7 of the Chicago 7, the James R. Thompson Center State of Illinois building.
Right, and actually the last two are really our first two Chicago 7. Yes, the Thompson Center, ever controversial, and of course the state bought a new building in the West Loop. And, you know, it is unfortunate the state is selling its assets, and we understand that the Thompson Center has fallen into a little bit of disrepair, which is unfortunate and a little unfair because, you know, just like the state capitol and the governor's mansion fell into tremendous disrepair, but yet there's a recognition that those are important buildings. And this is an important building to Chicago, too. So much of its 17-story atrium, and try to find another space like that, is really linked to its open plaza. It was meant to be a public building. I remember a Laurie Anderson concert that was held there and numerous events. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that the building just hasn't been reinvested in, and its upkeep has slipped, obviously. But, you know, this was a building built by the taxpayers and the people of Illinois, and it's really unfair to think of selling it. But if we do sell it, we want to make sure that it's landmarked. You know, the Sony Center in Berlin was based upon this 20 years later by the same architect, Helmut Jahn, and wildly successful. So why can't we have that here in Chicago? And really a wonderful building in so many ways. But for those who have issues with its exterior, walk into that interior space and find another building like that in the Loop.
I think it's people,
or anywhere close by.
I think it's people who don't like the movie Running Scared with Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. I think that's a big part of it.
Now, well, that, now, was, That must include our governor, too.
There you go. Now, I've got like a minute left, and I know we can't answer this question, so I'm going to have you on again in sometime in the future. But this building in particular, because it's so new, it was built in 1985. It's mm-hmm. the newest on the list.
Yes.
It's fallen into disrepair. How is that let to happen, and what do you do about that? So we're gonna have to answer that another time, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Thank you for spending so much time with us. The City of Chicago Commission on Chicago Landmarks meetings are normally held the first Thursday of every month, 1245 City Hall, room 201A, to discuss landmark designations and proposed demolitions or alterations for previously landmark structures. A regular meeting is immediately followed by the permit review meeting. These meetings are open to the public, again, when things are normal, which they are not right now, but that's what you guys do, right? You encourage people to come to these meetings and...
Absolutely, absolutely, and they're held by Zoom right now, and they're all videotaped, so you can even go back in time and see them. And we encourage people to participate, get involved, and also sign up for our free newsletter. It's at www.preservationchicago.org. It's electronic, it's free, and it's oftentimes 40 to 60 pages each month, and Adam Natenshin, our Director of Operations, is the author of that newsletter, and it's really an amazing resource.
Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago, we learned a lot tonight. Thank you for sharing the information, the passion for what is Chicago, and good luck to you and your organization. And thank you for spending time with us here at WGN.
Absolutely. Looking forward to our next conversation, Phil.